Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Welcome to New Books in Law, a channel of the New Books Network. I'm Nick Pozick, and today I'm speaking with Daniel Horowitz, author of Entertaining Entrepreneurs, Reality TV Shark Tank, and the American Dream in Uncertain Times, from the University of North Carolina Press. This book examines how the image of entrepreneurship presented in the hit reality TV show Shark Tank disguises and distorts the opportunities and traps of capitalism. It charts the rise of the cult of the entrepreneur from the rubble of the economic crisis to its place as a mainstay in American culture.
Daniel Horowitz, thank you for joining me on New Books in Law. I'm thrilled to have you on the podcast.
Glad to be here, Nick.
Your recent book is titled Entertaining Entrepreneurs, Reality TV's Shark Tank and the American Dream in Uncertain Times. For those that might not be familiar with Shark Tank, it's an unscripted television show in which entrepreneurs deliver business presentations to a panel of investors or sharks. These sharks then ask probing questions to decide whether or not to invest in each of these entrepreneurs' companies. And this book uses Shark Tank as a point of departure for a larger examination of the image of the entrepreneur in our cultural imagination. Why is this image so popular and why is it so important?
This image of the Shark Tank and the entrepreneur? Well, yes. So Shark Tank first appeared in early August 2009, a little less than a year after the collapse of Lehman Brothers. So it appeared at a time when Americans, tens of millions of Americans, were experiencing uncertainty. And Shark Tank, and specifically and entrepreneurship more generally, offered to viewers a sense that they too could thrive even in the most uncertain of times, that by connecting them, pitching to and connecting themselves with wealthy entrepreneurs who would mentor them and provide them with investment capital, they could turn their fledgling company into something wildly successful.
Sure. And you said that it amplifies the power of neoliberalism as a force that has transformed the world that we live in.
Neoliberalism, a term social scientists, cultural critics, and others use to explain what's happened in the last 40 years in America and many developed countries, the erosion of social welfare systems, and the strengthening of reliance on individual initiative. That is, not reliance on government, but on self-governance. And we can usually think of this neoliberalism that something emerges as something that emerges in the late 1960s, early 70s, when a combination of events, Watergate, the energy crisis, stagflation, the actions of powerful conservatives and their organizations, globalization, technological change over time undermined the commitment to government action and called on people to be self-reliant, independent, in other words, to embrace entrepreneurship. And then, after the 1970s, when this began, the Great Recession of 2007 and 8 intensified interest in how entrepreneurship held out such abundant hope in a neoliberal way, that people could take advantage of what they saw on Shark Tank as both entertainment and education.
Mm. So why write this book, and why write this book now?
So I jokingly say, and there's an ounce of truth in it, when I get tired in the middle of the afternoon and take a break from work, I often become a couch potato and distract myself by watching television. My wife of 57 years says that if I continue to watch Dr. Phil and Jerry Springer and even write books about them, that she'll divorce me. So that's the mundane reason. But in a larger sense, Shark Tank intrigued me because throughout my long professional career, I've been interested in the relationship between popular culture, politics, and the economy. And Shark Tank seemed as an ideal entry point into an exploration of a whole series of larger issues that I think drive a contemporary American culture, not just in Silicon Valley, where venture capitalism is so powerful, but in one's own community, providing hope to millions of people that they too can achieve the American dream. Ironically, even though the show itself originated in Japan, that's the original franchise developed by Sony, and has on offer versions in dozens of other countries. But I'm just interested in the American.
Sure. And this book goes well beyond the television show itself, as you said. It's you did a lot of field work in order to create a broader picture of entrepreneurship in America. Could you tell our listeners about some of the work that you've done on that?
Yeah. So to some extent, what I did was the ordinary stuff that any historian would do. I went to the library, I went online, I read books, but I also interviewed probably 100 people, most of them viewers, but also some insiders in what is called in LA the industry, even though no one associated with the show would talk to me for reasons I can understand. Part of the field work I did was going to university campuses, where entrepreneurship dominates. I went in the Boston suburb of Wellesley to Babson College, which more than any other higher education institution focuses on entrepreneurship. For a full semester, I audited two courses on entrepreneurship at the Marshall School of Business at University of Southern California. But my absolute favorite field work was that twice I entered the world of aspiring young entrepreneurs as a judge in Northern California, in East Bay, for a high school competition. Perhaps 1,000 high school students, most of them had watched Shark Tank, even though the high school iteration was very different from the reality TV one. And that experience, which I really loved doing. I sat at a table and a high school student would come up to me, it was very scripted, and say, I want to open a pet grooming store in my hometown and I'm seeking help for you. And I would respond by asking them questions and then evaluate them. It was really a great deal of fun and very exciting. But it drove home to me how widespread is the influence of Shark Tank specifically and entrepreneurship generally. From competitions, obviously, at places like Harvard and Columbia Business School, but also even in third grade classrooms. And I love getting a picture of that when I went in San Ramon, California, over a weekend and met these ambitious high school students, and then talked to them, interviewed some of them later about what they had done and what they aspired.
Sure. And how did you wrangle all of this into a book?
Well, to the extent I can, I threaded the book with some of the personal experiences. I wanted, in writing this book and others, it's hard for a historian to do, but I wanted to get reach a more general audience than many historians do. I try my best to write in accessible prose, avoiding fancy words. And it's something historians are doing more and more. We're supposed to be neutral observers that stand outside the story, but I try to inject myself into it by talking in the preface about my own ambivalence about what I was seeing on television, but also through these discussions my fieldwork of a high school experiencing entrepreneurship at the high school level, I tried to convey some of the richness of this experience, not only my experience, but those of high school students. So it's not an easy thing. I mean, I go from a deeply scholarly literature and discussing it, and then talk also about a third grade competition.
Can you say more about how you think about your audience? Because while the book is grounded in a very scholarly approach, your writing often, it gets kind of witty, and it's really, this book is infinitely readable. It's really just, it's a fun piece to read with and engage with. And how do you find that balance?
I work hard at it. I really appreciate what you say. I'm glad you think I achieved it. I tried to do it. It's an interesting process. There were some times when the copy editor for the book didn't want me to use my own voice, but I insisted on doing so. A reviewer of an earlier book talked about my performed neutrality as a writer. And I do my best both to get inside the minds, the worldviews of entrepreneurs, especially the people on Shark Tank, but also to stand aside, sometimes wittily, sometimes critically, sometimes both, and think about what I'm reading and convey to an audience the excitement, but also the problems with what Shark Tank and more generally entrepreneurship reveals.
Sure. And what are some of those problems?
Well, race, class, and gender and immigration are prominent among them. So let me talk about that. The sharks themselves. So there, on any given show, there are five sharks, sometimes a guest one. But the sharks themselves, the panel, the normal panel from which the five are derived, are a diverse cast of characters. Two women, one African-American, two Canadians, both of whose lives were deeply shaped by immigration, one Jew, a couple of Roman Catholics. So the sharks are relatively diverse, and they have the producers of the show have, by bringing on people like Alex Rodriguez, have tried to bring Latinos on as well. Yet there are limits to the representativeness of what the show represents. You may know that something like 43%, an astonishing number, of companies in the Fortune 500, that is the biggest American companies, were founded or co-founded by an immigrant or the child of an immigrant. And among the top 35 companies in the Fortune's list, that share is 57%. However, on the show, although it's not clear to me, there's no data I can find except impressionistic data, surely there's much lower percentage of pitchers, that is, people who appear and pitch their companies on the show, a much lower percentage than 43 or 57 who are immigrants. Moreover, the identities of the pitchers in other ways, pitchers is the word I use about the contestants, underscore how unrepresentative is the world Shark Tank pictures. Women show up, but not in proportion to their place in the population. And moreover, they generally pitch products and companies that, if I can stereotype, we might think of as gendered, that is, educational food, whereas men are much more likely than women to pitch technologically oriented projects. Even more striking is that Asian Americans and less frequently African Americans take the stage, with almost no Latino men or women, or perhaps I should say, with almost no Latinx men or women appearing as pitchers. Moreover, although women are relatively well represented as contestants, they are disproportionately underrepresented as winners. And I might add, it's impossible, given there's no data on this and one can only guess, impossible to ascertain the percentage of LGBTQ among contestants. I suspect it's lower than the population. I've never seen an openly gay or lesbian contestant appear. That's one set of problems. And here's another. Entrepreneurship in general and Shark Tank specifically emphasize the independence, the individualism of entrepreneurs, that they operate without the help of government or community support. But we know, and it's certainly true of Silicon Valley, we know what a profound role the federal government interventions have played in fostering innovation in America, and certainly in the development of the web and in so many other ways. So there's a contrast between the picture on Shark Tank and in general the pictures about entrepreneurship, a contrast between the kind of lone entrepreneur, although very often husbands and wives, parents and children, siblings appear, a contrast between the lone entrepreneur, heroic in character, and the reality that entrepreneurs operate in a context that is profoundly shaped by the government, by the society, by the culture.
Sure. And how does that image go on to become a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy about entrepreneurship?
Yeah. So you're absolutely right. It's not just the show itself, but in the literature of entrepreneurship, in the autobiographies of the sharks and the founder of the show, Mark Burnett, the focus is all on I did it alone, drawing on traditions going back to Norman Vincent Peale or the Horatio, even earlier to the Horatio Alger novels. I did it alone. And that sense of the heroic entrepreneur, which is so prevalent in our society and certainly central to neoliberalism, that image suffuses discussions and treatments of entrepreneurship, even though it provides a distorted image of reality.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor's the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
So in the book, you talk about Mark Burnett as being this catalyzing force in bringing together this image of Shark Tank. Do you think that he has a disproportionate role in shaping our collective vision of entrepreneurship, or do you think it's something else?
Oh, no, I think his power to shape our culture has been immense. So Mark Burnett, a British-born, British-born working-class guy who comes, gets off the plane in LA at LAX with supposedly, as stories like this go, just $100 or so in his pocket. And a friend meets him and says, I've got an interview for you tonight to be a nanny in Beverly Hills. What, he says? But he goes and convinces this wealthy family that they get on not only a nanny, but he, as a member of an elite, or once a member of an elite British paratrooper force, they also get someone in security. He goes on to develop a whole series of shows, but the ones most people will be familiar with are Survivor and The Apprentice. And so Shark Tank is really the third in that series. And what all those shows reveal or share is a Darwinian worldview in which the fittest, or maybe more, perhaps more appropriately, the most ambitious struggle to survive. And though the politics of the Sharks and Burnett are hardly so simple, it should not come as a surprise that the show's vision shares much with libertarianism. After all, Mark Cuban has a yacht named for the title of Ayn Rand's famous book, The Fountainhead. So that the show, like entrepreneurship, like Burnett's autobiography, celebrates on liberty, independence as virtues that will help rescue Americans in perilous times.
Do you think that's a little grim?
Well, here's what strikes me. In writing the book, I also read, I had read some of it, of course, I had read a whole series of books about how inequality, incarceration, racism, and the breakdown of communities play such prominent roles in contemporary America. And I really worked to, in the book, to juxtapose the view that the entrepreneurial vision with what I consider a more accurate position of American life that prominent social scientists and journalists have recently offered. And remember that the title of the book is Entertaining Entrepreneurs. And I started out, the working title initially had the word education in it. And I came to think over time that entertainment and education were two prominent features of Shark Tank. But ultimately, I came to understand the show, Shark Tank, as entertainment. That is, they to be sure the sharks themselves are skilled and wealthy. Mark Cuban worth several billion dollars. Skilled and wealthy entrepreneurs themselves. But they're also, if anyone who's watched the show knows, they're also very clever actors who weren't trained as actors. But Mark Burnett had an extraordinary eye for picking people who could be powerful and vivid on television. You said, and this is a different issue, but I do want to talk about it. You said originally that it's an unscripted show, and that's very true. There is no script, but it is nonetheless a highly edited show. And what we see on television, the 8 or 10 minute sequence of any pitch competition, what we see on television is distilled from an hour, 2 hours of film that come long after the contestants have been trained and polished in order to appear on stage. So yes, it's unscripted, but no, as I reveal in the book, it's a very carefully, brilliantly edited performance that we're seeing.
It's true. It's highly produced and interestingly at odds with a lot of what entrepreneurship is, right? Entrepreneurship is very much about making experiments, maybe having some mess, What was that Facebook expression? Moving fast and breaking things?
Yes. Yes. Oh, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, the literature on entrepreneurship, the percentage of people that fail, the difficulty any entrepreneur has of both founding a company and then leading it later into its becoming a mature corporation, the surprises, the unexpected things that happen, all of that, all of those are characteristics of entrepreneurship in reality. But the show itself, at least what we see on television, and the pictures we get to some extent of the sharks are, it wasn't so hard. Their autobiographies, to be sure, emphasize the long ups and road with its ups and downs. But what we see on television doesn't convey any of the difficulty, the surprises, the unexpected, the initial failures, etc.
And you note that each of the sharks has a very carefully crafted biography or a careful narrative that they've created of themselves.
Yes, absolutely. Each of them, Mark Cuban least so, but each of them has written a series of books, and each of them has created, and I don't think these stories are untrue. They're just carefully crafted. They, their rise from nothing to the, and excuse me, certainly with Robert Herjavec, Barbara Corcoran, and Damon John, three of the six sharks, their extraordinary rise from poverty to the heights of American, North American successful entrepreneurship. Their biographies, as is true of Burnett's itself, are very carefully crafted as kind of a very familiar genre of how I made it, how I got from nothing to everything in a way that unlike, as you know, the autobiography of Langone, the founder, one of the founders of Home Depot, who says, "I could fill Yankee Stadium with the people who make my life possible." And the sharks themselves in their autobiographies or in their stories pay some attention to the people, but by and large, they're heroic stories of their rise.
No man is an island.
Yes.
So what's coming next for you, or what are you working on right now, and what is coming down the pike?
You know, I'm hunkered, like most of the people I assume who are listening to me, I'm hunkered down, socially distanced. I haven't been within 6 feet of anyone but my wife in months and months, but at creates conditions under which to fill my days, I go on. So Entertaining Entrepreneurs is the second of what I think of as three books on early contemporary, second of three books on early 21st century American culture. The first was titled Happier, The History of a Cultural Movement that Aspired to Transform America, came out a couple years ago. But now, retired from teaching and hunkered down, I have been working away on a third, on the impact of the Great Recession on real estate, residential real estate. I started all this well before the pandemic hit, but that horrible, tragic event that is shaping all of our lives has prompted me and others, and I think here of Fareed Zakaria, to wonder if this current crisis is one of a series in the early 20th century of crises that will challenge, if not actually undermine, neoliberalism. If, through no fault of your own, you have to rely on the government to prevent you from starving, from losing your home, and to offer or develop a vaccine, it becomes clear that there's some limits to self-reliance. I think both the Great Recession and the pandemic have driven home to tens of millions of people that government and communities are as important as self-reliance.
That's a great note to end on.
Yes, thank you.
For our listeners that are interested in following your work, where can they go to learn more?
To find out more about me and my work generally, just Google Daniel Horowitz, my name, and Smith College. And then you'll see my Smith College website, and under it on the lower right is a personal website. Click on that. You'll find out more than you want to know about me. And if you want to read my book, Entertaining Entrepreneurs, it was published by the University of North Carolina Press and is available through their website, of course, Amazon, and your local book.
It's a great stocking stuffer.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me on New Books in Law, and stay safe.
Nick, I so appreciate. You're a wonderful interviewer.